enjoy a good squeeze.
Hello, and welcome back to A Good Squeeze. I'm August.
And I'm Margo.
Hey,
After a good start.
After a good start. This is the show where we dive into the world of 007 through nostalgic eyes.
Novice. I thought you said, like, nostalgic eyes. Like
we nostalgic eyes.
We nostalgic eyes things. I'm like, novice eyes things.
Nostalgic eyeballs and
novice butts.
That's right. Hey, Margo. When you were young, mm-hmm. and your heart was an open book,
was it?
You used to say "live and let live."
No, I didn't speak English, so that's kind of I don't know what the direct translation is, but hey, for the sake of this bit, yes.
So that's,
how about you?
That's
how about you, August?
That's what you're in for this show. Margo's really funny jokes.
Stop it. That's so rude. For context, I just gave August a lot of a smack because we'll be having these delightful conversations about Bond. We'll be having a whale of a time. And I'm staring at this like deadpan, just no emotion, barely a smirk kind of reactions. And then he'll listen back on the episode and he'll be like, hey, you said something funny. I'm like, why didn't you laugh? Why didn't you just, you can have a good time. So I'm forcing him to laugh at my jokes now. Oh, they're so fun. God damn it. All right. You know, I have to go back to being deadpan. Yeah.
Oh, boy. But hey. Yeah. We're diving into a fun one today, or
that's
at least
right.
Could be for some. And this is going to be an interesting one, because ever since we first discussed doing the show, and even in our first few episodes, we have talked about Live and Let Die.
Yes, we have.
How I really like it, and Margo has certain feelings about it.
That's right. And the biggest thing, the reason it keeps coming up, is because a very important part of our journey into the 007 realm is that this was the first movie you showed me that was 007. That was the introductory movie that you chose. You were like, this is going to be it. This is the one that you're just going to knock your socks off. And well, it didn't.
Yeah.
It didn't really do that. It really put my socks on, I guess. How about before we dive into the conversation, you set the mood for us. What was it that we ate? That's such a stupid way to put it.
I put my socks on. Anyway, what did we eat?
What did we eat? Sorry, I was so stupid.
You know, with the show, I like to set the mood, mm-hmm. and it helps. What's the word? I always forget every week.
You can do it.
I keep wanting to say engorge. Immerse.
Yay!
It immerses us into the world of 007.
Nice.
And for this particular one, you know, it was New Orleans.
Down south.
Yeah, so I made some gumbo, mm-hmm. and I was trying to be a little healthy, so I served that gumbo in a acorn squash.
That's right.
It's like an acorn squash bowl.
What was the meat of choice for that one?
Alligator.
Alligator meat, that's right.
We put alligator meat in there a la Live and Let Die.
We made our way down to the strip district. We got ourselves some exotic meat. Well, I didn't. You did. I waited at home, by the
but
door.
But you did in spirit.
That's right. I told you to do it. I said, get out of here. God.
So that was the meat of choice in the gumbo, but mm-hmm. on the side, I was feeling froggy, and I made...
Oh, that's right.
We made frog legs, too. Grilled frog legs.
For a second, I was like, what are you talking about? Froggy, that's not an expression, but...
It is an expression.
I get what it is. What does it mean? As you know, English is not my first language.
I'm feeling froggy. I don't know.
Is that not a song?
I think that is.
Okay.
I don't know. Feeling hoppy, feeling jumpy, feeling...
Okay. Up to no good.
Slimy. I don't know. I don't know.
Just feeling like sticking my tongue out and missing.
That's what that means.
Yeah. So frog legs and alligator gumbo served in acorn squash. What was your drink of choice?
A couple Sazeracs.
That's right.
That's right indeed.
I'm like, tell them.
What's funny is as you the listener will see that on Instagram, Margo creates these beautiful posts. Beautiful.
Thank you.
And for Live and Let Die, there's a gorgeous looking cocktail as per usual. And the signature drink in this movie is a Sazerac, as Felix Leiter orders. And I asked her, I'm like, what cocktail did you put in there this week? And she's like, a scotch and soda.
Well,
like,
okay.
It's supposed to be a Sazerac.
In my defense, in true novice fashion, I Googled the drink of choice. I typed into www.google.com. I put a signature drink from movie Live and Let Die. I think that's what I put. And then it just went, the first thing that popped up was scotch and soda. And I went, cool. And I didn't further investigate. Because these posts are never rushed. They're never rushed. They're always, I work on them for 2 weeks straight. There's the color balance.
Only job, yes.
That's right. My only job. I host too.
in spirit, in keeping with the spirit, I am partaking in a bourbon, please. In which Roger Moore orders in this film, and he asks for on the rocks or with ice, and the bartender says, that's extra.
Really?
Yeah, it's a good
smart joke.
That's a good joke. One. But this is also like, you know, Bond is always drinking vodka in these films.
That's right.
And in Goldfinger, famously, he orders a vodka martini, shaken, not stirred.
Mm-hmm.
And so was the case in Thunderball and You Only Live Twice and Honor Majesty's Secret Service and even Diamonds Are Forever, but here we are in Live and Let Die. He does not order a martini.
Well, Bond is a worldly man, and he likes to, as a spy, he needs to, blend in. And that was his way of blending into pretty much an all-black bar. It was like, hey, bourbon. They'll never know.
Yeah, perhaps so.
Good old pasty Roger Moore is like, I did it.
Yeah.
Is this a spicy thing to say? I don't know. That was the era they were in. Mm-hmm. I'm just making an objective observation.
And, rewinding back, now that we've set the mood as far as what we ate and what we drank and what we're drinking,
mm-hmm.
You mentioned that I introduced you to this movie.
That's right.
And this introduced you to the world of James Bond. This was pretty recent into our dating. Like, we had just started and still getting to know each other. And, I chose a spicy one for you. This movie is probably the spiciest of all the Bond films.
Mm-hmm. It's and by spicy, you can put the pieces together. You know what we're saying. Just think of what Live and Let Die implies and what some of the risque aspects of it might be. We're just referring to it as spicy, like your gumbo was. I hated that joke. So I will say, too, is when you introduced me to this movie, little Margot was revving up to build like some liberal militia stuff. Like, Margot was full on like, everybody needs to be PC all the time, everywhere, no matter what, blah blah blah. Some people are like that, and that's okay. Hey, don't worry about it. Sometimes we just kind of have an agenda, and anything that could really, like, you know, what do you call it, like, motivate some kind of like political stance on my end, I took that opportunity. I went for the throat. And that, as we started watching that movie, it was pretty obvious. I was like, okay, this is not for me. This is not for me. Now, mind you, this was like, what, 4 years ago? 4.5 years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we've been together 5 years. So like that was fresh. I was fresh out of California. I was in a certain mindset. Now, this is just to kind of set the pace of like, this was my initial reaction to it for X, Y, and Z. But yeah, let's dive in. Let's see. You know, I mean, okay. Also, just a little note. I think we watched this movie about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago.
Really?
It's been a minute.
Well, right? We actually watched it about 5 months ago.
No.
It was in October.
No.
October, what? November, December, January, February.
It was in October?
Yeah, we were trying to make it our Halloween movie.
Oh, my God.
But you know what? We were getting...
Where was I? Did you freeze me? Like, what?
We were getting married, we just were busy and never got to record.
Oh, my God. 4 weeks ago. My ass. My
Four
God.
4 months ago, maybe.
4 months ago. Okay, well, that makes sense. So, I'm a little... rickety in the plot.
Okay. I've seen it a million times. We're gonna have a good chat.
Yeah,
about
you're gonna be driving the car on this conversation.
Yeah. Not only have you seen this movie once, you've seen it twice. And that's okay. You know, before we dive into the movie, I'm gonna share a tale of how I first saw this film. Mm-hmm. So when I was a young boy, I grew up with James Bond. However, until I was the age of 9, I had only known Pierce Brosnan. I knew GoldenEye, I knew Tomorrow Never Dies, and I knew The World Is Not Enough. And that was the world of James Bond to me. But I really liked him. I loved the video games. I've talked about all that stuff to ad nauseum. Live and Let Die was the first non-Pierce Brosnan movie, James Bond movie, I had ever seen. It was for Christmas one year. I received 3 VHS tapes from my uncle. It was Live and Let Die, it was Thunderball, and it was Dr. No. And I didn't know what the heck they were. I didn't know why I got them. Like, I didn't even know they were James Bond movies. I was 9 years old.
Oh, he just gave them to you.
Yes. And, it was, I don't know, I won't get into all that as to why he might have got them for it. It's Christmas, he was my uncle, he got me a present as
And you know
a
what, I like that. That's a very uncle gift to give. It's like, you know what, I like this, he needs to like this, here we go.
Well, it's funny, because I was looking at them, I didn't know what they were, I was reading the backs, I remember, and seeing they were James Bond movies. It's a 007 and such, and I was like, this isn't Pierce Brosnan. I remember my mother, like, quietly talking to him, like, she's like, why did you get him those? And he's like, you told me he wanted James Bond movies. And she's like, no, I said he wanted James Bond action figures, which they probably didn't even make at that time.
That's such a, like, your side of the family type conversation. Yeah. It's like, you said he wanted missiles. Like, yeah. I got him missiles.
He wanted action figures. They didn't have them, so I got him the movies.
Yeah. Honestly, he's probably thinking, like, I'm going to need something to talk about with this kid, like, at some point. Like, so might as well make it something.
Yeah. So but that's what really started fanning the flame. Because from there, in a very short amount of time, if that was Christmas, like that spring, summer, I was watching a lot of James Bond. I've mentioned this a lot. My dad introduced me to a lot of them, especially on TV, like the 15 Days of 007 mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But it all started with the Pierce Brosnan films at the time and then these 3 VHSs that I had received. And I started with Live and Let Die because... I noticed that the character Baron Samedi was in this, and he was a playable character in the movie GoldenEye.
So in the movie? In the movie GoldenEye?
In the video game.
Video game, you said movie.
Yes, a playable character.
Okay.
In the video game GoldenEye, you could play as Baron Samedi. And he was a character in Live and Let Die, so I was like, I gotta watch it. I gotta get out of here and watch this movie and see what it's from. And I was so mesmerized by Live and Let Die for... a multitude of reasons. One, it is obviously extremely different than the Pierce Brosnan movies, but it's also extremely different than any James Bond movie. I would say even still to this day. That can rub people the wrong way or it can rub them the right way. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, excuse me, in the Bond community, this typically ranks very high. This one for me... you know, a lot of my personal feelings for James Bond films and ranking them is, hey, based off of nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
And this one has gone up and down throughout the years. It used to be, at one point, it was my favorite. And then it kind of was like my number 2, then my number 3. Then it had settled at number 5 for a long time. And maybe 3 years ago, it got bumped to number 6. And... I think it's back to 5 again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has that contributed at all to like how you rank your bonds? I mean, I'm guessing like, because you've given your praises to Roger Moore and everything. Did that movie have an impact on that?
It certainly does. But like ranking them, if you looked at my ranking, it would show like a Pierce Brosnan, a Daniel Craig, a couple Sean Connerys, and a George Lazenby, and then Roger Moore. Roger Moore is my second favorite James Bond actor or portrayal, rather. So through that lens, no. But.
Because for me, on the other end, watching, again, that was my first, not only my introduction to Bond, that was my introduction to Roger Moore.
Oh, yeah.
Who's less than a gentleman in this movie. He pulls a sneaky on...
Oh, yeah.
He pulls a real, real dirty sneaky on Solitaire.
Yeah.
Was her name? Yeah, on Solitaire. And that was how I knew Roger Moore. Was like, he's a sex addict. Like, he was just, he's a dirty little titmouse here running
snake
around.
Snake in the grass.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing is like, my initial reaction to a lot of these movies were based off of like the knowledge I had about the world in terms of like, what are they called? Tarot cards?
Mm-hmm.
Which one? Tarot or Taro?
Tarot.
Tarot cards. Tarot cards are things that are incredibly sacred for a lot of people. You have to cleanse them. You have to store them a certain way. You have to, I don't know the whole thing about them. I don't keep them around just because, you know, the bad juju that comes with them or the risk that can, you know, conjure negative energy and negative spooky ghosts, you know, and stuff. So to me, that's like a very serious thing. And for Solitaire, it was a very serious thing. And clearly there was this understanding that these things are meaningful in that culture and and to Solitaire personally. And he totally took advantage of that just for like a good lay, you know? And like...
Would you say a good squeeze?
Monsieur. Yeah, so to me that was the most shocking part was like how, you know, he like it was just the shot of it too. It wasn't like, oh, how dare you, Bond, like they you know, like they pan from the kiss to his hands and then he drops the deck and it's like all fanned out, like he's not even hiding it. All she used to do is look down and be like, wait a minute, like you tricked me. It's so sneaky and he doesn't care. It's just another kind of like, you know, what do you call it? Sweep it under the rug type mm-hmm. scheme. And that was my initial reaction to it. Obviously, that was how I knew Roger Moore.
The cards say we will be lovers.
That's right. And like her reaction was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And he's like, man, I guess we have to do it. You know, like,
kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you went into your first viewing of a James Bond movie with preconceived notions.
Of the world, yeah.
And of the world of James Bond. And they weren't good. And this film, you felt, validated that.
Well, to be honest, is that I didn't know anything about Bond at all. I knew he was a spy, and I had, like, I knew the parodies and stuff. Mm. I didn't know anything about him. This just painted a very negative preconception. Mm. This movie created the preconception that Bond's kind of a sleazebag. And I mean, you know, he kind of is, but we all have a friend who's kind of a sleazebag and we love him and, you know,
But unlike other sleazebags, he speaks with a British accent.
That's right. And he kisses like a fish. So that was kind of like, to me, this was walking away that first watch. That's what I took away from it was... The people who make these movies are racist, and James Bond is a naughty, naughty. You know, like he, to me, it was just like there's nothing impressive about the mm-hmm. character. But this time around, if we want to unpack that, you know, I don't know.
I was just going to say, you know, and from there, you kind of took that with you across the years and across mm-hmm. the James Bond journey where... you weren't necessarily looking forward to a Roger Moore film, in particular.
And I will say, exactly. Roger Moore was my vendetta. Roger Moore, I made up...
He was the association,
yeah,
for sure.
I made up rumors about the guy. I was like, I was like, oh, he jumps into the shot and his elbow goes up too high when he points his gun during the barrel sequence. And you know, it was funny because right after that, I think you showed me, it was a Casino Royale or GoldenEye?
I think the next one we watched after that was GoldenEye.
GoldenEye.
Well, it was a Casino Royale,
and then
but
I
you
fell asleep. Yeah, tragically.
So I was like, let's do it right. Let's do GoldenEye.
Regrettably, but you know. Okay, so GoldenEye, yeah. The GoldenEye completely changed my tune. It was like, oh, okay, so this is what Bond is about. This is what I should be expecting in general. Now I've seen the spectrum. But that movie in particular, like I said, it just turned me into like such an anti-Roger Moore Bond individual, for lack of a better term. Yeah, that's really what happened. It set me off on the wrong track for sure. What that meant. But here we are with our James Bond podcast. That didn't stop us. So
no, and you know, I'm just like regaling my memories of showing James Bond films to you, and ultimately it led to like, hey, we should have a podcast and talk about it, because I think your perspective is very interesting against mine, and like we're having these conversations anyway, so might as well talk into the cans and throw it out to people to hear. But you know, it was like, I guess, a warming up process. We, you know, showed you GoldenEye, showed you Casino Royale. We watched Goldfinger. We watched From Russia with Love. Then I think we watched another Pierce. And actually, we watched the whole Daniel Craig series up to that point.
Yeah. Which really is a series of unfortunate events when you think about it. But
And then we finally decided to watch another Roger Moore.
From what I remember, whenever you would try to bring up another Roger Moore, you were like, okay, what order do you want to watch these movies? And I would say, let's just like, we got to be strategic about the Roger Moores. Cause if like, and this is how much I hated him. I think like, if there's an asteroid coming towards the Earth, I don't want my last movie to be a Roger Moore. Like, I was planning ahead like that. I was like, what if I die watching Roger Moore? Like, get over it. Like, yeah. It's okay.
And
yeah.
You know, I think the next one we watched was The Spy Who Loved Me. Mm-hmm. Fan favorite. We watched the opening. I remember thinking that was pretty awesome, and we watched the whole movie after that.
Spy Who Loved Me, that's with the parachute.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we've done Man with the Golden Gun. You had seen it initially and enjoyed it, and then we did our episode on it. I think it was that one, and in between all these things, we're indulging in James Bond social media and people's, you know, other discussions on these films and making jokes between each other. And then when we're watching Man with the Golden Gun, I remember these words coming out of your mouth. You said, Roger Moore's warming up to me. Like, you're getting it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's warming up to me.
Yeah. He's like, wait 3 days, Roger. That's the rule. I have to wait until Margot warms up to me before I say hello. Yes. And then, you know, it came time. We started the show, and it was only a matter of time before we got to Live and Let Die. Last year, when we were planning on doing this video, we were busy bees. So we didn't get to it right away, but, you know, it was also the 60th anniversary of Live and Let Die last year, or was it 50th? 50th, not 60th. 60th?
Are you sure? 50th. When did it come out?
1973.
Therefore, 50th, yes.
50th. 50th anniversary, so it was a big, you know, anniversary for that film that I love dearly and Margot hated dearly.
That's accurate.
Yeah. It was a good time to finally revisit it. So we watched it. It was Margot's second time after her dreaded first time. How did you come out of Live and Let Die?
How did I come out of it? Coming out, I'm happy that I liked it more. I had more appreciation for it. I wouldn't put it up there with like, I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of Bond films, but the way that I rate things, I anticipate how I'm gonna like a movie. So like, I don't even think I've seen 10. How many have I seen?
I bet you've seen more. You've seen
ballpark 10.
You've seen way more than 10, maybe 12.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, I would say it doesn't break top 10. Like, it doesn't get in there, I don't
really
think.
One of your least favorites,
I would say, but I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to rank them right now as we sit.
What do you like better, this or License to Kill?
I don't think I've seen, I did not like License to Kill. I did not. We'll talk about that another day.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Wait, License to Kill, that was with...
Timothy.
Bang, bang, pew, pew. I didn't like that at all. With, what was I going to say?
Let's be fair about it. Compared to Roger Moore's other films that you've seen. You've mm-hmm. seen Math Golden Gun. You've seen Spy Love Me. And and you've seen For Your Eyes Only, which we will do an episode on down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But of those four or five.
I don't think it's fair because, out of I'm talking fresh now doing the podcast, mm-hmm. this and that. Mm-hmm. I would say... It's definitely, I like Man with the Golden Gun more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to use the other ones because I was still fuck you, Roger. Roger, look at me. I was making fun of him as he would walk onto the set.
Yeah.
Because I was on set with him. No. I don't know. I don't want to rank it. We're not there yet.
No.
But,
okay, sure.
For me. So what I would say is that I had a different appreciation for it because there's more of an understanding of what Bond is. When I was watching it, I was just watching it movie night. We're just jumping right in, no context, no understanding for the culture. It's like if you're watching a Star Wars movie, but no one's ever really talked to you about Star Wars. You've heard of Star Wars, but you've never, in passing, you've seen maybe a parody here and there, but you are not aware of what Star Wars is. And then you watch a Star Wars movie, you might be like, yeah, okay. That's how I walked into Bond. So context established. Now walking out of it, it helped me like Roger Moore. A little more, but that sounded like a pun, but I did not want it to be that pun. And you're giving me a deadpan face. That's great. What was I going to say? Damn it. Hold on. Where was I? Train of thought. Okay. I'm back. When I was looking at it, I had more of an appreciation for Roger Moore. The understanding of the story, the cinematography, the pacing of it, looking at it from a Bond lens, way happier with it. I think I did say I actually kind of like this movie. I remember being kind of and defeated in liking it, purely for the spice of it. But I was still able to identify the moments where I was like, yeah, I didn't like that. I still don't like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't like that. I appreciate it more now. Oh, I didn't like that. I didn't like that. I mean, back when I first watched it and everything. So, it definitely evolved. I evolved with it. Overall, for you, this was just a regular old bedtime watch. You were just cozing up.
Yeah, it's we've mentioned a couple times that this is a spicy film and possibly the spiciest of the Bond films. It's definitely a time capsule kind of movie. So. Mm-hmm. It came out during a time where blaxploitation films were all the craze, but Ian Fleming, who wrote this novel, had a very particular high society view of a certain culture.
We'll say.
And not to say that translates into this movie or that it doesn't. But definitely a lot of themes and a lot of...
It was also made in the 70s.
That's what I meant by time capsule. Mm-hmm. It's James Bond in New Orleans, in this made-up country of San Monique, I think it is. And it's a lot of voodoo.
Is it made up? San Monique?
What is it? I mean, not San Monique.
Because San Monique's a real place, I'm pretty sure.
It is. Whatever it is a made-up country. Dr. Kananga of, that was San Monique, maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, commenters later, maybe San Monique is made up and the movie convinced you that it's real.
No, because I read it in a book. Truman Capote wrote about San Monique, I'm pretty sure. That he's whipping out his phone.
Yes, definitely. I mentioned there's voodoo and things like that, and it takes place in the South, and you have a racist sheriff character who's spouting obscenities and things like that.
Who's also very beloved, I will say.
But
so much so that we have chosen him for our quote on our Instagram post.
But nothing obscene.
Nothing obscene, no.
Yeah, nothing racist either. He's He's just, yeah, he's just a Sour Patch Kid.
He is, yeah.
First he's sour, then he's sweet.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest thing for me was J.W.
Sheriff J.W. Pepper.
When I first saw him, I was like, this isn't real. They're not taking themselves seriously. Like, it was such a over-the-top character. I couldn't stand him. I was like, this is so stupid. This is a caricature for people who just want to, like... Oh, excuse me, I burped.
You don't say.
Oh, Lord. I don't even know what my logic was behind it. I just did not like him. I didn't like his cadence. I didn't like his candor. I didn't like anything about him. And now I'm like, oh, JW. Like, we're talking about, like, hey, we should name our kid JW something so we could call him JW Pepper. Like, no, like, it's turned into...
I was like, yeah, maybe... Maybe not that
maybe
one.
We won't. Well, obviously, we're not going to name our kid after J.O.W. Pepper. But, did you find out San Monique?
Fictitious San Monique.
What?
I'm telling you.
Where? Okay. Well,
maybe you're thinking of Santa Monica.
Truman Capote wrote a book, and it's called Music for Chameleons, and they're on an island, and I forget which island they're called, but I swear to God, it said Monique or Monica or something like that. Anyways, hey, DM us.
Santa Monica is a place.
Well, Santa Monica is a city. In California, where I'm from. No.
yeah.
Yeah. So,
but there's other, like, there's a lot of slang terms and just, it's just spicy all around. And I can understand why, like, it doesn't age well. We'll say that.
No, definitely
doesn't,
not.
Doesn't certainly age well, yep. But that's why you have to be able to, if you choose to, watch this film through a certain lens.
That's right. And also, but that's kind of the whole point of the Bond experience, is that you have all these movies that are dated. Sean Connery does not treat women with a lot of respect, and he doesn't do so in interviews either, and that's kind of what was normal at the time there. We're not justifying it now. We're not saying, like, oh, we got to blah, 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 blah. Yeah, no, we don't want to see these movies now being made. We don't want to see that kind of stuff unless it's like a, what do you call it, like not satire, but like a comment on society or whatever, you know, this and that. But like, this is the movie that came out. It's part of the Bond experience. They're not just gonna like outcast it because it's, I can't explain why, but it's just, that's just part of it.
Yeah.
And you know, it's watching it from that lens too, we're able to identify. We're like, probably shouldn't have done that. Yeah. Probably shouldn't have done that. We're aware of that, but overall, like, it is a very good movie. It's a good movie. Roger Moore is interesting again, like him and his fighting. It's just so like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lands. You know, like, it just, to me, again, like, takes away from the whole like Bond is a spy. Like, you know, there were brawling brutes back in the day. They could have brawled him up or something. You know, he doesn't need to know, like, you know, Wing Chun or whatever that is. Like, you can make him fight better. I think the stakes were very well established. The stakes were high in this movie. I really did like that. You know, all the sacrifices and this and that. Those were the moments that were a little spicy, where it was like the rituals and, you know, they kind of took it over the top and you're like, yikes. But yeah. It is scary. It is the idea of like a sacrifice. I remember as a kid, because we weren't raised in any kind of like religious environment or anything. So, you know, I just didn't know any of this stuff. And in every religion, every single religion, to me, the idea of a sacrifice, and this is across all religions, was terrifying. The idea that someone would do that to me was absolutely crazy. I'm not saying that it is. It's just, as a child, I was like, spooked. So when, you know, upon seeing that in this movie, that definitely had an impact on me. I was like, oh, gosh, I'm getting the chills, you know, the willies. Yeah, the stakes are high. The stakes are there. And the villains are very convincing.
Yeah. And, you know, diving into the villains and elements of the plot and just other characters in general, like, all that creates this this cocktail of Live and Let Die, which, you know, we mentioned the spicy things, but it does create a very unique movie and a unique James Bond film that's unlike any other. So if you're used to watching like a certain trend of Bond films and you stumble upon this one, it's gonna feel different.
Yeah.
It's gonna feel different than other Roger Moore films, even. It's I think, yeah, it's the only supernatural James Bond movie, too. Not that it's, like, purely based in supernatural, but there is some elements that are kind of like, okay.
You're right.
Especially the Baron Samedi character, the man who cannot die. And, you know, he's an element in this film. You got your main villain, Dr. Kananga, who poses as a gangster named Mr. Big.
Mm-hmm.
You got his henchman, Teehee, who has a metal hook for a hand, a butter hook, and Whisper, who he...
Whispers, right?
Shall I open it?
There we go.
Yeah, very, very husky voice and a husky man. But then you also have the Bond...
Who, by the way, we forget about a little bit, Whisper.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, he kind of goes away for a bit. He goes on vacation, and then he comes back. He's like, what happened?
He might still be alive, who knows?
Yeah.
Then you got some Bond allies. You got, well,
didn't he get stuck in the couch?
He didn't get stuck. Well, yeah, that's why he might still be alive.
Yeah,
he got stuck on the couch.
No,
he got sealed away in like an airtight container, so he probably did die.
Also known as a couch.
Bond allies. You got the main Bond girl. You got Solitaire.
Yep.
Also very unique Bond girl. Also the film debut of Jane Seymour. She was 21 at the time.
Yeesh.
So even then, there was a big age gap between her and Roger Moore in his debut Bond film, who I believe he was 43.
Hot dog.
Yeah. So quite the age gap there. She might have been 22. But and all this is off memory, other than Sam Monique. I'm trying not to Google nothing. You had Felix Leiter. And the character of Felix has been in a few of these films up to this point. But this actor who portrayed Felix, I don't know his name offhand, he is the only actor other than Jeffrey Wright who has portrayed Felix more than once.
Oh, okay.
He's in this movie, Live and Let Die, and he reprises his role in License to Kill.
Very cool.
And up until Jeffrey Wright, he was my favorite Felix portrayal, but not anymore. But then you also have Rosie Carver, who is a CIA agent,
yes,
who kind of turns on Bond, so I don't really know if she's an ally.
Well, she definitely is, but like her motives change. So she starts as an ally, and then she's kind of like stuck between a rock and a hard place or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't really have a choice at that point. I really liked her. Honestly, I remember when we were first watching it, I was like, oh, cool, for sure. Like, she's competent. I mean, obviously, it's like a lady in the 70s, so, you know, she's not as like...
I think the joke is she is incompetent as a CIA agent.
But, like, but that's what I mean. Like, it's not like, I don't know, like, where they're like, look, she kicked, but she didn't kick, really. You know what I mean? Like, it's like part of the thing. But also, I don't know, I believe it. I believe her, like, playfulness. I believe... what do you call it? I mean, you know, she's in the CIA for a goddamn reason. Like, I don't know.
She's like, you know, you're only my second mission. My first was Baines, who got killed. Bond makes a joke, something like, well, I hope I'll be expecting the same attention on this case. And she kind of like confusingly laughs because he died.
Yeah.
Not to say you're wrong, but yeah, she's supposed to be portrayed as like not knowing what she's doing.
I like her as an ally, though. To me, it's convincing.
Sure.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying like, yeah, I want her on my side during the apocalypse. I'm saying as like a woman in the 70s portrayal, like she's got synergy with him. Wasn't she the first Black Bond girl?
Yes. And I was going to say she's part of movie history, not just Bond history. But yeah, she's the first. African-American Bond girl,
yeah,
for sure.
And with that, like, I mean, to me, it's like, I, again, when we're watching Roger Moore, Sean Connery, this and that, like, I'm not expecting like Natalia level Bond girl stuff. I'm really not. But what I am expecting is synergy. I'm expecting an ally who has her own personality, who is competent in her own right, like, not just, I don't even want to say arm candy because, you know, they always end up like that. But she's a convincing character. Yeah. I really liked her. I thought she was great. And we'll get to Solitaire too. But like, it's damn shame how she went. But yeah, no, I do think she started as an ally and then she was just put in a difficult situation.
And she does facilitate some good comedic moments upon Bond and hers meeting. You know, Bond, just before she arrives, Bond kills a poisonous snake in the bathroom with a can of hairspray and a cigar. And then Rosie goes into the bathroom shortly after and screams and comes running out. And Bond's like, oh, yes, I forgot to tell you. Never go into the bathroom without a mongoose. Something like that.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
But, you know, shortly after that, too, not a comedic moment, but she goes into her room. And there's that little hat. Do you remember the little hat with the bloody chicken feathers in there? I don't know why. As a kid, that gave me the willies. I think I had a nightmare involving that little
effective.
Hat. And even to this day, when it cuts to that hat and the music's like, it scares me.
You know
it
what? Her reaction to it was very, again, convincing. Like, it wasn't like, ah, I am scared. You know, it was like,
it's a warning. Get it out of here.
She was distraught. My God. And that's the thing is like, an omen. Like, if you had a bad omen, man. Like, you know, if like a glass, you know, if you're just minding your business and you're about to grab your cup of water and it just cracks, you're like, oh no, something bad's going to happen. You know what I mean? So if you saw a bloody, a hat with a bloody chicken feather in your cup, you'd be like, oh shit, that's even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, no, I thought that was, I love those little touches of, like, the like you said, the supernatural. Like, you just kind of have to believe it, you know?
Yeah, and, I mean, that kind of leads into the main villain's plot and why it involves some supernatural elements. Dr. Kananga, he is the dictator of the country of Saint Monique, and he is growing poppies or heroin.
He's growing heroin.
He is.
He's growing poppies. Yeah.
Yeah. He's growing poppies. And under the voodoo threat of Baron Samedi, it keeps the locals at bay, keeps the residents of this country away from this certain area. And then as Mr. Big, who's Dr. Kananga's like alter ego, United States like persona, Mr. Big is distributing said heroin. So he's like doing business with himself, essentially, and distributing heroin for free is his big evil plan. I'm going to give it away for free, drive my competitors out of their minds and out of business, making my heroin the only available thing on the market.
In theory, brilliant. Yeah, give away as much free product as you can. You know, it's heroin. It's expensive to make, you know. We'll see how that pans out for you.
Well, he had a plan, but he didn't plan for Bond. And, you know, Yaphet Kotto plays Dr. Kananga. And I've always really liked his portrayal, and I've always really liked Dr. Kananga. However, I find he has a personality shift in his final scene. So he's pretty quiet. He's pretty reserved. He does get angry, and he treats Solitaire as his property. Solitaire is his like fortune teller, his tarot card reader. She has this ability to be able to see the future, effectively so, and he treats her as his tool. So he's very calm, collected, angry, forceful when he needs to be. As Mr. Big, he is portrayed as like a gangster, but they're kind of one and the same. And it isn't until the final scene where Bond kind of and Solitaire stumble or get captured and come upon his lair underground that he has, I don't want to say more personality, but he definitely like
perks up.
He perks up. He's like, ah, Mr. Bond, hello. Like, he's definitely more, like, almost aristocratic evil villain.
Yeah.
Kind of, like, laughing in his chair. The only thing he was missing was a cat to stroke kind of thing. He's, like, a deliciously evil villain. And I wish we got that more. Or at least maybe peaks of that more. Because by the time we get to it, and he's, like, a fun villain at that point. He's gone too soon. He has an inflated opinion of himself.
That was the thing for me that was very confusing watching it not just the first time, but the second time around too, was such a changing character. There's no consistency there, and there was no like transition to kind of reveal that. So I was like, wait, I thought who? What? Like, I thought it was just a completely different character, because you know it's the 70s. Sometimes they just like are like, we can't get another actor. You go in there. And it was very confusing because then it's in that scene that he pulls off the mask, right?
Earlier.
Yeah, for sure. That's because I was like, what?
Yeah, huh? Mr. Big. Who? And it's when, like, it's revealed Mr. Big and Kananga are the same person, even though you kind of already know.
Yeah, but it was just a little too much of a shift for me, and it took me a second. I think you actually had to tell me. I was like, oh, okay, I'm on board now. So it was like, what? Who? Where? So we got there slowly but surely.
Sure.
One thing that I will say in reference to how he treats like Solitaire and how, you know, like you said, she's his tool. He uses it for, his own personal gain. And, you know, obviously he deals with heroin. So, like, obviously he's not going to be, fair wages and this and that and good living and good working conditions kind of guy. So expected. That's expected. But what I didn't like was how Roger Moore also used Solitaire as a tool. You know what I mean? Like, this was the opportunity for in the movie to build that kind of heroic, like, I will save you. Like, you know, you're clearly being used here. Even though you do believe yourself, like, that your powers are, you know, real and this and that. And, you know, maybe they are, maybe they aren't, whatever you want to, you know, interpret that way. I didn't like that. She really just did not get a break. At all.
No.
She really did not get it. Well, technically, she got a better deal because she doesn't have to do the heroin psychic shit. But she still got screwed, you know? So, yeah, that was my biggest beef with that.
Yeah. And, you know, Solitaire, well, we can kind of jump to her, but Solitaire comes off as a damsel in distress because she is, but it's more like, rescue me from this horrible life.
Yeah.
Because
wasn't her mother also clairvoyant?
Basically, the lore we're told is they're clairvoyant until they lose their virginity, and then it's gone.
There you go.
And Kananga is like, it's my power, it's mine to take away from you if I so choose, and I will do it, kind of thing. So that's why he's especially mad when he finds out that Bond, in his words, did you mess with that?
Jesus Christ.
That's what he says. Touch her? But Solitaire, she's one of my favorite Bond girls. Top five for me.
She's great.
Mostly from a character perspective. You know, she's got this unique situation, but not only is the situation unique, her whole persona, her whole character is unique. Just the whole look, the vibe, the tarot card reader, fortune teller, clairvoyant. I've always kind of been drawn to Solitaire.
Her candor, her role makes sense. It's not a damsel in distress. It's, you know, somebody who has a power, and it's, you know, there's a fragility to it there. And, you know, you kind of have to not dance around the issue, but you have to, you know, have a little finesse with her. And God, I wish there was more finesse, to be honest. But she was great just overall. I think that was another thing that shocked me was the age gap. When you told me he was 46 and she was 22, I remember being like, you know, like, just whatever.
And, you know, even though this is her introductory film, Jane Seymour has gone on to have a legendary career. She's still acting today. She's like an ambassador for charities and things like that. But she's, you know, well-known Shakespearean actor as well. She's had quite the career. But what I'm saying is there's she's so talented. You see it even in her first film here. Even being so young.
You can see there's a connection with the cards, the way she holds them, the way that she places them. She cared about the role. Mm-hmm. You can tell. I just really like her performance overall. I really don't have any complaints about her. When she was distressed, she was distressed. Her relationship with Bond made sense to a certain extent, you know, like.
Yeah, as you said, other than throughout the film, some racist moments. and some spicy language. The spiciest thing is certainly these tarot cards. So Solitaire believes in the card. She's clairvoyant. She has effectively used these as a device to tell the future, and she believes in them. And when she meets Bond and has him pull a card, it reveals the Lovers, meaning they could potentially be lovers in the future. Well, he sneaks into her room one night and has he has the cards slightly stacked in his favor. He bought just a deck of Lovers cards and tells her to pick a card. You do believe in the cards. And she does, and it's the Lovers, of course, because all of them were lovers, and he tricked her into having sex.
Yeah, which is kind of ridiculous, because, like...
Because he doesn't need to trick anybody. He's so damn handsome. And smooth.
Fair point. That's right. That's where I was going.
Oh, okay.
No, where I was going was, if he just wanted to get laid, you know, just, I don't know. Be smart about it. To his credit, that was a little clever because he took advantage. But you know, it just don't do that. Just don't do that. But from her perspective, the thing about it is that like, you don't fuck with someone's tarot cards. You don't. You just don't. You don't touch them. You don't do this. You don't do that. That's a. There's a ritualistic aspect to it. There's a spiritual aspect to it that is incredibly important for its efficacy. And there, you build a bond with those cards. And this girl is put in a position where she's essentially breaking that bond. Like some people cleanse their cards and stuff before using them. Mm-hmm. And it's done in a very specific way. And the significance of the tarot cards. Now, I'm not blaming this 1970s Bond film for not doing the research. Like, whatever. That's fine. But from her perspective as a character being involved in this movie, it's not just, oh, she's not clairvoyant anymore. It's like, what else could have happened? Like, that's how you summon demons and shit, you know? Like, that's spooky stuff. That's not, especially if you believe in it and you use them regularly to predict the future, you're messing with a balance there. Now, okay, personally, I don't mess with tarot cards. Don't bring them to me. I don't want them. But that's like a big deal for people who use them regularly. And it's more than just, yes, it is 100% the violation of trust and the manipulation into doing it with her and stuff. But you know, and then there's that also that underlying thing of like, he literally like did something sacrilegious that for her is incredibly, that's dooms her essentially. And then whatever, towards the end, she seems perfectly fine about it. But, yeah, to me, that was like, it was like so many layers of that was just like, oh my God, Bond, come on, man. Like if you're trying to save her, there's a different way. You know what I mean? Like, you could think of something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could, she's not like, I'm only clairvoyant with him. It's like, she's clairvoyant with the cards. Just take her and get her out of there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're Bond. We know you'll get out of it. It's fine.
He also doesn't know or understand or believe that, you know, by having sex with her, that she'll lose this power. He doesn't know that and doesn't understand it even after.
Yeah, so it doesn't even matter. So he didn't even have to do it. You know what I mean? That's just manipulation. Like, that's just not okay.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're saying. Yeah. Spicy.
Spicy.
Do you think it's odd also on the back of these tarot cards that it says 007 all over them? Like, should have saw that coming, huh?
He doesn't even need to flip them over. He's just like, yep, that's me. I thought that was a cool Easter egg, but...
That's all it is meant to be. Yeah,
yeah, and also merchandising. Yeah. That's the thing. It just, I don't know.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
You go ahead.
No, you go. No, you hang up. No, you hang up. You hang up.
I'll say, let's touch on another Bond ally, the best Bond ally of them all, Mrs. Bell, the woman who's taking a flight lesson. Where's Mr. Bleeker?
Mrs. Bell.
I don't know, but Bond's in a chase sequence.
Airplane. Yes.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding, of course.
I was fully ready. I was like, yeah, let's talk about her.
What color are her glasses?
I don't remember she wore glasses, but I remember she was flying the plane, and then the plane wings go as they land into the hangar or whatever.
Ah, shit. Yeah. No, I was going to, of course, talk about J.W. Pepper.
Hell yeah. Is he an ally?
Not necessarily in this film. No, in he makes a return in The Man with the Golden Gun.
That's right.
So in this one, no, he's not. I guess he's not a Bond ally. No, he's a sheriff on the hunt, and he's I guess initially he's not necessarily chasing Bond. Oh no, he is. They are chasing Bond,
but not for Bond purposes. They're just like you were right. Speeding.
You're speeding. There's this crazy, awesome boat chase sequence that goes on for a very long time, but it is really cool. It's real stunts, real boat chase.
Hell yeah, no CGI here.
No, I don't think there's like hardly any music either.
Mm-hmm. It's funny actually, because just a side note, not to derail your train of thought, but when you came up here, you know, right before we were recording, August asked me if I was ready to, because it had been a while since we'd seen this movie. He's like, do you think you're ready to record this and that? And I was like, yeah. I remember like pretty like basic like moments in the movie. Like, you know, like the car with the penny whistle. And he was like, that was Man with a Golden Gun. And I was like, fuck. So, you know, I kind of showed how prepared I was. But it also shows the impact of
a good penny whistle.
Of a penny whistle. A penny whistle and a good chase scene. Yeah. And I like how there's consistency in those scenes, and also the glue that holds it all together is J.W. Pepper.
J.W. Pepper and his chewing tobacco.
That's right. God.
Boy.
The amount of spit. Oh, it's so gross when it comes. Because he spits it, doesn't he?
Yeah, a couple times. At one point, he spits in a rag and then wipes his forehead with so the gross. Same spitty rag.
So gross.
I always thought J.W. Pepper was very funny, comedic relief. Yes, he does do some spicy things, but his like antics, and he's like the buffoon sheriff.
Yeah.
And you know, all these bad things happen to him as his car gets destroyed.
The buffoon is a great way to describe him. He really is. Like,
he's
so
got,
charming.
He's got some great lines. He's just so like unique to look at too.
Yeah.
Accent, you can't beat it.
He stands out from all the other cops. Too. That's what I love. Well, obviously he's the sheriff, but you're kind of like, why are you the sheriff? And he just, there's just so much about him that like, he just looks like he got pumped up with air. Like he just looks like a perfectly filled balloon, and he, his accent and the way he talks and his little one-liners and everything, it's just brilliant. It adds so much levity to the severity of the chase scene and the situation itself.
He has a line that's like, a boat crashes into his car and another police officer vehicle comes up, and the officer makes a joke like, oh, it's one of those new boat cars. And Pepper walks up to this cop and he says, by the power invested in me by the state of Louisiana, I hereby commandeer this vehicle and those in it. That means you, smart ass. I love J.W. Pepper, and I don't know why he shouts this line when he finally catches up to Bond after Bond's done chasing. He's talking to Felix. They're moving on with the plot. J.W. Pepper finally shows up and he's like, what are you, some kind of doomsday machine, boy? I love it.
Oh, that's the quote I wanted to use.
I know.
Damn it. Yeah.
That's okay. But what you picked was good.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Tune into Instagram to find out.
Yeah, what is it going to be? That's brilliant. He's just such a he's cheeky little cheeks, you know?
Yeah.
You just want to grab him and pinch him and go work on him. He's not intimidating either. Here's the thing. He could be And he had the potential to be an incredibly frustrating character, where it's like, maybe he could have apprehended Bond, and you're like, no, you idiot, he's the good guy. You know, like, that could have happened. It didn't, though, because he's, like you said, a buffoon, and not incompetent, but a little incompetent. Obviously, it was a stab of the police, you know, I guess, and just Southerners in general, how Americans see, or not how Americans, how the English see us. And, I thought it was a lot of fun.
And you know, it's interesting to hear you say that, because way back when, your first viewing, J.W. Pepper was definitely the spicy. You did not, I did like, not like him at all.
Mm-mm, not even a little bit. I was like, there's no point in that character. That was my biggest thing too, is I was like, what the hell did he contribute? There's nothing. And then when you told me like, oh, he reappears because people loved him so much, I'm like, who would love such a man? And it was just like, just ridiculous. Just over the top anger. I was an angry person. I'm still an angry person, less so than I used to be. But I, yeah, it was interesting. I like him now. He's funny. He's fun. He's fun to look at. He's fun to hear. He's fun to just watch in his and renegade state, I guess.
I was going to say the antithesis, not necessarily that, but on the side of villainy, there is a head henchman. His name's Teehee. Now, I'm going to ask you that, like, there's the henchmen in a lot of Bond films, iconic ones. You got Oddjob throwing his hat. You got Jaws, 7 feet tall with his metal teeth. Mm-hmm. You got Zenyatta Top, who always did enjoy a good squeeze. And you got Teehee, who has this metal
claw,
metal hook for a hand, who owns an alligator ranch.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
How do you feel about Teehee?
I don't know. I have no opinions. That's the thing. A lot of these henchmen, I really like the villain. Very convincing. His death was ridiculous. Henchmen, I don't know. Really didn't think much about it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, the claw, I dug a lot. I thought that was a very nice touch. I was like, hell yeah, you can tell he's evil because of he's missing a hand. And replaced it with a hook. It was very like, ah, yes, I can tell he is a bad guy. Ah, look at him. He is, in fact, a bad guy. Mm-hmm. Look at this bad guy go. Whatever. What about you?
I think he's underrated.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's underrated. Never really gets talked about. Mm-hmm. Never really gets mentioned in, like, top lists of henchmen, things like that. But I think he's... and this could be because I've just seen this movie my whole life, but I do think he's iconic in a sense. Like, he's got the unique look, you know, not only the hook, but he's got the big red jacket and these glasses, and he's got that distinctive laugh. Yes, his name's Teehee, but he kind of has like this like huskier laugh. Like,
what do you think about him makes him underrated? Like, why do you think people don't give him enough
attention? I think he's definitely very challenging to Bond in a few scenes in particular. One, we're shown he's very strong with his hook hand because he bends Bond's, you know, classic Walther PPK gun at the barrel, just bends it.
Oh, yeah.
In his bare hands. Hook hand. And
when that happened, I was like, just shoot it, see what happens. Just, you know.
He they take Bond to the alligator ranch where they process the heroin, I believe. But
they test it on the gators.
Yes, they do. And he puts Bond in that little island and throws, you know, chicken out in the water to get the alligators. So he like puts Bond in these harrowing situations. Also, fun fact, that alligator ranch is a real place in Goldeneye, Jamaica. You can visit it, and it's called Kananga's Alligator Ranch, which it was called that before they were filming this movie, and they chose to give the main villain, Dr. Kananga, that name after the alligator ranch.
That's awesome.
And the owner of it. And the owner of the alligator ranch, this is a great stunt of Bond escaping this little island. These alligators, not little alligators, they're big alligators, are slowly approaching, and Bond runs across the backs of these alligators to safety and escapes this island. The stunt was a real stunt. It's very impressive.
Crazy.
And it was done by the owner of this ranch who doubled as James Bond.
And you can tell. The thing is, there's not a doubt in your mind that those are real alligators because they like curl their backs up and they hiss. And you just like, oh my God, that is just a terrifying experience. I can't imagine. But the guy was probably going, oh, 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 while he was doing it. Like, that was just...
Well, they did a couple takes.
Oh my Lord.
I'll have to show them to you because one of them, they get him. They get, well, they don't get him, but gets him through his boot. He didn't get bit, but definitely got a hold of the boot.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Scary.
Yeah, I would love to see that. We could post that on somewhere.
Yeah, it's and that's another thing I love about this movie is the action and the stunt work is very impressive throughout.
Absolutely,
very impressive. By today's standards, but even at that time,
and that's my biggest qualm with it. There's such high potential for so many wonderful stunts, and they do them, but then they're like, they could just give Roger Moore a karate lesson, just one karate lesson, have him throw a punch. I just don't get it. They had a dude running across alligator backs. Teach him how to roll. Bend your goddamn knees. You know what I mean? Like, it just, I don't know. So that's my one of my biggest beefs with Roger Moore and Sean, not Sean Paul. Dear God.
That'd be interesting.
That would be fun. Sean Connery films. It's just one of them looks like he's in a bar fight, and the other one looks like he's like 12 feet away from his opponent, which I'm sure he is because that's how like stunt work works in like movie sets. But you could, I don't know, ran across alligators. You can, anyways. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting about Roger Moore. This was his debut film in the role. He went on to appear as Bond in 7 films. They wanted him earlier than this. Kind of similar to Pierce Brosnan getting the role, but because of the show Remington Steele, he was unable to at the time. They wanted Roger Moore earlier, but he had commitments to the show The Saint, and he was unable to commit to Bond, but they got him eventually down the line. And I think it was in between, like after Sean Connery was done with You Only Live Twice, it was supposed to be Roger Moore. And, you know, just life kind of played out the way it did. But ultimately, when Sean Connery was done with Diamonds Are Forever, he, you know, gave his blessing of Roger Moore is the guy. Like, to all you people who want me to keep being James Bond, I will not be. It will be Roger Moore. Because when they did cast George Lazenby to be Bond, they kind of disguised it for a while that there was, like, not that it was Sean Connery, but they didn't really, like show off that, like, hey, it's a new Bond.
Yeah. That was the first time they changed. That was the first change of a Bond. Like, no one was expecting, oh, who's going to be the next Bond? That's so established now that you know there's going to be another Bond and then another Bond. Now, depending on how long the period is, you know, this and that, that's a whole other discussion. But at the time, it was like, that's it. It was Sean Connery was James Bond.
Yeah.
End of story.
It wasn't a common thing in like film series to change the actors like that
and
at
remake
this time.
The story and this and that. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely not common. So Roger Moore coming aboard, very, as we've been saying, very different, very different demeanor, cadence, style, but.
Alongside that is you see that change. More so because of the consistency of other characters, Moneypenny, Q, you see their dynamic and the dynamic changes. It's no longer like, oh, this is just a new.
Q's not in this movie.
He's not in this movie?
Mm-mm.
Who's in the.
But M was. M.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know what I mean. I'm talking about like in general.
In general.
Yeah, yeah,
sure,
yeah.
Sure.
In general, like if, let me say in general 6 more times, if you've got a new character portraying. Or new person portraying the same character, and you keep the same people portraying those same characters, those dynamics are going to change and it's going to emphasize the change.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that did not sit well with a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, like to the point where The Man with the Golden Gun, the next film, did not do well financially. And they were in trouble, Eon Productions. We love Man with the Golden Gun. It's a classic now. Some would say it's not a good movie, but that's your opinion, man.
Yeah.
It did not do well financially or what was expected. And neither did Live and Let Die at the time, but it did, you know, it was going down. So The Spy Who Loved Me was like everything or nothing for sure.
Yeah.
And that's what changed it around. People finally felt like Roger Moore kind of settled into the role more and people's expectations or not even that, but they'd just grown to really like Roger Moore at the time in the 70s as James Bond.
They went through the, 7 stages of grief?
maybe. But, you know, like I said, he's my second favorite portrayal as James Bond, mostly out of nostalgia and uniqueness. He's just very different than any other Bond. You know, you got like the rough and tough sexy spy, but what about just sexy spy?
Yeah.
you know, I was mentioning he is different, and you know, they do this on purpose, but like, he dresses different than Sean Connery did. Mm-hmm. He orders a different drink than Sean Connery did. And Sean Connery's portrayal of, as Bond, and even George Lazenby's, he smokes cigarettes. Roger Moore never smokes a cigarette. He smokes cigars.
Oh, that's right. Hey, you got to smoke one of those cigars.
I did. Yeah. It was a beautiful wedding gift from one of Marcus.
Shout out to my cousins.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they listen sometimes. They listen sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of Marcus' family members hooked me up with Roger Moore's favorite cigars, mm-hmm. which are what he smokes in this movie.
Yeah.
And it was good.
It was good. Fine.
Hey, you know, as far as cigars go, it's the best cigar I've ever had.
Oh yeah, I know you enjoyed those. You got to share that with your stepdad, huh?
I did.
Yeah, that's right. That was good. That was so. Thank you to Switzerland and the cousins and all that. We're trying to keep things anonymous. That's why we're not saying
names,
obviously.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, he is just wholly different in all regards.
Yeah.
And I do enjoy him as Bond and seeing him as Bond. And I look forward to you seeing more of his Bond movies. We've seen a few, but there's a few to go. You know, we haven't touched Octopussy or A View to a Kill or Moonraker.
And I'm glad that I like him more now, because I know that there are some Bond films out there that are generally just not good movies. Like, just not good movies. I know that's a thing. And the thing is, if I can at least appreciate the actor portraying Bond, it'll help me appreciate the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So on my track to liking Roger more and more, it's Roger a lot more. There we go. How about that?
That's his middle name.
A lot. Yeah. Spelled A-L-A-U-G-H-T.
Yeah,
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. And you know what? If there's an asteroid coming towards Earth, I think I have bigger problems than, you know, watching a Roger Moore.
Yes,
so,
unless it's A View to a Kill.
Okay.
You know, just to kind of wrap up, I do want to touch on the book side of this.
Mm-hmm.
Of this story, Live and Let Die. I did read this book by Ian Fleming. And it's very spicy.
You've told me.
Yeah, if we think the movie's spicy, the book is like, oof, to the point they are re-releasing the Ian Fleming books. And, you know, we can discuss how we feel about this later, but they're re-editing his books to be more appropriate for 2024 eyes. I don't know if I agree with that, you know.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's wrong, like, it was a book that was written in the 50s.
Yeah.
Like,
part of understanding history is understanding what was wrong about it.
Mm-hmm.
No, and being able to identify, like, oh yeah, no, we don't want that.
Yeah,
keep it around just to see, you know,
exactly,
whatever.
But these I think they will still be around, but the new editions coming out,
gotcha.
I Live and Let Die is going to be heavily edited.
I'm sure.
Yes.
Sure, that's gonna happen.
It's not even mostly the same. A lot of plot points are the same, but like, J.W. Pepper's not in there.
What?
Kananga isn't a character. It is just Mr. Big.
Like in the original book, like the original.
In the book.
Gotcha. I thought you meant like they're just taking out great characters.
No,
like, no, J.W.
No, I'm just saying some of the differences between the book
gotcha.
And the
film. Yeah.
Mr. Big is the only character, the main villain.
Mm.
Solitaire is a Caribbean woman.
Mm.
Very different. Just a lot of different things like that. Throughout the book. I did enjoy it. I didn't like it as much as some other Bond books.
I will say, too, it's like, this is a common theme with the Ian Fleming books. It's also a common theme in general with movie making at the time. It wasn't a matter of, like, let's stay true to the book. It's, we really like the story. We want to be inspired by it. We're inspired by it. Let's make our own thing, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just talking about this in the kitchen when I was telling you back in high school, I fundamentally believed that filmmakers did not make movies accurate to the book if they were based on a book, because I thought that, like, Hollywood was like, we don't want high schoolers cheating by watching the movie instead of reading the book. And I lived in a very, very particular bubble, and that was the reality.
Apparently.
I believed in. I now know that is not at all the case. So,
yeah. This is also Ian Fleming's second James Bond story. It was really? Casino Royale and then Live and Let Die.
Wow.
And they got to this film, obviously, down the line. It was a spicy book, so I imagine it wasn't easy to adapt, and that's why they waited so long. But, like I mentioned, blaxploitation films were, you know, on the rise, very popular, and this book, like, you know, fit that style.
The Bond movies tend to hop on those trends.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
And they adapt to those trends, which I'm impressed with. That's a testament to the fandom.
Yeah. So it's an interesting read as far as history goes. All in all, this is a very interesting film. One of my favorites, one of my first in the James Bond journey that I've taken my whole life. And like I said, it creeps down in my ranking, but lately it's been creeping back up. Not that it's low. It was 6 or 5, and now it's back at 5. It could even make its way to 4 again. We'll
this
see.
It happens every time we watch a Bond movie.
Oh, it'll happen every year.
Every year. Every day.
I'll readjust.
Every year. That's
I'll
right.
readjust.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of any last minute thoughts. Yeah, the opening credits. Or the opening sequence.
Oh,
credit
my
sequence.
Goodness. Title sequence.
Title sequence, thank you.
The opening sequence, not the best. One of those ones where Bond's not featured, which is okay. It's just like the agents getting assassinated here and there. Does have
yes.
a cool...
Yes, okay, I remember now.
The
yeah.
cool, like, New Orleans, like, celebration of life funeral. Yeah. Like, whose funeral is it? Yours.
And then, I thought that was cool.
That's cool.
I thought
that's
that was
cool.
really cool.
But then you got the snake that, like, kind of... doesn't bite the guy, but he dies anyway. But to your point, how could I have skipped this? But
the title sequence one of the best.
Yeah, maybe the best. Like top 2-3.
They'll never make them like that. Not title sequences, but like it's a lost art form, and that was the pinnacle of it. And they'll never make it like this again.
Yeah, you know. The song's banging.
Hell yeah. Can't go wrong with him.
Yeah, Paul McCartney and the Wings doing Live and Let Die. It's a banger. It's a classic. Yeah. And it's very unique to a Bond film also, at least for the time. It's one of the best. It slipped my mind. I started the show by quoting it, but then I was just like, oh yeah, and we talked about the song, but we didn't.
That's right.
And it's one of the most iconic things about this movie.
I mean, most people will hear that song without even knowing that it's part of that movie. That which was the case for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was just a dope.
Yeah, the
Beatles song. I was like, the Beatles, Live and Let Die. It's had nothing to do. It's just good old McCartney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's transcended the Bond. You know,
yep.
Zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. So all this to say, you've had a unique journey with this film. I have had just a long journey with this film as a nostalgic and as a novice. Mm-hmm. Does this film belong to everybody, or does it just belong in the past?
Okay, you ready for this?
Da-na-na.
Da-na-na.
Na-na. Aww.
Ba-na-ba-ba-na. I had to throw it in. I think it belongs to everyone. Hear me out. A big part of James Bond. I was expecting a bigger reaction from you, so that's disappointing. Yeah, again, just.
Well, you said
Margot,
hear me
you
out.
Said something interesting. Like, really? I couldn't tell that you thought so.
You said hear me out, so I'm listening.
So here's the thing about it is, I think it does belong to everyone. Probably. I would say it is a good introductory film. I really think so. And here's why. Because you're not trying to, if you want to ease somebody in, maybe not. Because there's no other film like it. There really is no other Bond film like it. It is spicy. There's a lot going on. The relationship between Roger Moore and the Bond girls. It's a lot. It is a lot. That entire movie. But it's got a banging title sequence. It's got a banging theme. And overall, it is a well-made movie. Like you said, there's like really good sequences. There's really good cinematography and, you know, this and that, whatever. So I think it's a very tough pill to swallow, but I think it's an essential pill to swallow. So if you're going to introduce somebody to the Bond fandom, you need to show them this movie. You can't save it for last and be like, okay, so I know you really like this, but here it is now. Just do what you did with me. throw him in the pool. Mm-hmm. Give him like a life vest, you know, just let him know, hey, we're going to be doing this again, but, you know, the water will be in the kiddie pool. I think it's an important movie to really get throw a novice into because of the nature of it. That's something you just have to get used to if you're going to be part of the Bond film. Bond film? Bond fandom. It's spicy. It's not for everyone. Like, the whole Bond thing, it's not for everyone, but it welcomes everyone. And you kind of just have to get past that hurdle in order to appreciate it. And the thing is, in comparison, like, you showed me this movie, then we watched GoldenEye. I loved GoldenEye. I was like, that's my Bond. Mm-hmm. And right then and there, the second that I decided to rank them, I was part of the Bond fandom. Right there. I ranked them. I was like, I don't fucking like Roger Moore. I don't want to see his face. I don't want to hear his voice. Asteroid. Like, and then Pierce Brosnan, I was like, oh, he's so cool. Like, oh my God, I love Natalia. Like, you know, I was invested. And I compared the movies. And that thus bloomed some kind of fascination for the Bond experience. Which I know is a podcast and I should stop saying that because I don't want us to get in trouble. Shh, no, he's
want to get sued?
He's so nice. He wouldn't. Yeah, it's I think it belongs to everyone for that reason, because you gotta it's shock value. You know,
well, this might shock you, but I'm gonna vote against what you said and say it probably belongs to the nostalgic, for all the reasons you said. It is and from what I experienced firsthand, and mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing. I don't agree that this is a good introductory Bond film, because mm-hmm. the way you're saying it is like I just use yourself as an example. Like, yeah, you saw it, like, let's say this is the only Bond film you ever watched, and I'm like, this is James Bond, if you like this, will you watch more? And if you were on your own, you would not have watched more Bond films. Not subjected you to them, but I'm like, let's try again. Like, we had to work together,
but I
and
have
agree together.
I have free will. Yeah, I have free will.
No, here's the thing. This is my point. Now, let me finish my thought. I wouldn't introduce some. I did, but I've learned my lesson. I don't think this is a good introductory Bond film. Mm-hmm. I think this is one too. Come upon down the line, because it is so unique and different. It is unlike any other Bond film, so it's not necessarily a good representation of what a James Bond film is, but it's like a fun, fresh. It's fresh. It's like a fresh take on a James Bond film. You know, there's just a lot going on, as we mentioned. It's the only one that dives into supernatural elements that could throw some people off, too, in comparison to other Bond films. It is a classic. It is highly regarded. I think it's one of the best Bond films, but I don't think it's a good introductory one.
Here's the analogy that I'm going to use. This movie is the frog legs of the Bond films. Now, if you told someone, you want to come over for dinner? And they were like, sure. And then you just gave them a plate of frog legs, they'd be like, no. Like, no, maybe, no. Yeah, are you kidding me? Absolutely not. If they'd never had frog legs, they wouldn't just be like, oh, yum, 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 yum. But if you're like, hey, do you want to come over for dinner? Yes. Cool. We're going to do frog legs. What? Have you ever had frog legs? No. Well, here's what they taste like. If you come over, we're going to have some frog legs. You just got to take that first bite. And then from there, why don't we have something, you know, I don't know, gumbo, jambalaya, something. It's a lot. It's a lot. It is a lot. And it takes a big step to just take that first bite. It's that first bite of frog legs. And then you're like, okay, the visual wasn't super into it, but this tastes good. Okay, what else are we going to do from here? We're going to come over, we're going to have some frog stew. Frog stew, I don't know, we already did the frogs. That's my Roger Moore, the frogs. You know, it's a lot to take in, and if you surprise someone with it, not a good idea. But if you say, hey, have you ever seen, are you part of, like, you know, I love Bond, can I introduce you to Bond? Sure, we're going to start with a really spicy one. I'm just letting you know, you're going to have a lot to say after this movie. Okay. But, and not saying like, oh, but you should appreciate these parts. Let him watch it. Let him write, like, just, and if they don't like the frog legs, let him, like, hate on it. But at least you created an experience that is going to make them want to come back. You know, it's not you surprise them with frog legs. You were like, dude, if you hate the frog legs, like, let's talk about the frog legs. The frog legs suck. Like, you know, it's tailoring the experience to get the person mm-hmm. into it. And I think that's why it's a good introductory film. And here's the thing. I've been saying it isn't. I think it is because there's no other Bond film like it. And it's a good, what do you call it? It prepares you for it. It's like, this is as bad as it gets. This is the worst it's ever going to get. This is the worst it's ever going to get. Because the next time they come over, you don't have frog legs. You got chicken sandwiches. And they're like, hell yeah. And the chicken sandwiches are delicious. You made the frog legs delicious. Why not make the chicken sandwich delicious?
Well,
that's what I think. Because then you show them GoldenEye and they're like, I love this.
Sure. I was going to say, like, when you say it's the worst you're going to get, like, it's a good movie. There are worse Bond films.
No, that's what I mean. Like, this is as bad as it's going to get in terms of, like, spicy. Okay. You know, because frog legs are delicious.
Listen, we do have to find a verdict, and I'm very glad and happy you are championing this film.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, based on your initial reaction to this film, first time viewing,
mm-hmm.
and we've watched it a second time, and within this episode, you still ranked it like your second least favorite Bond film. Is what you said.
I'm anticipating other Bond films I don't like, so I'm ranking it at 27. 25. I thought they were 27.
Well, you know, smack my bum. Yeah, there are, technically there's 27. There's the Casino Royale comedy film, and there's the Never Say Never Again Thunderball remake.
Yeah,
but so those don't count. They do count
in my book. So regardless of that, in terms of verdict, you're thinking about my initial reaction. You're thinking about this and that. Not a good... Are we not doing the James Bond podcast? Like... You know, here I am standing, defending it. Here's the thing. You don't need to appreciate something to understand that. Or you don't need to, like, root for something every day to know it's good for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because this movie is not good for you. Okay, hold on.
Pick a card, Margot.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like I know that, like, I don't know. Vitamin C is good for you. Am I taking it every day? Like, am I going to be like, no, everybody needs to take their vitamin C? No, mind your business. But if someone's like... Hey, should I take vitamin C? I'm going to be like, yeah. Like, yeah, I don't, but go for it. Yeah,
you know what? You brought vitamins into it. I'm on board. I'm going to agree with you.
Really? Or are you just trying to end the podcast? You're trying to end this episode.
It's time to wrap it up.
What's the verdict? Well, the verdict is in. We disagree. We're trying to reach.
First time, which is I find so fascinating because I love this movie. It's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the best. But I don't think it's for everybody, and I think it should be introduced down the line.
Mm-hmm.
You have, like, almost opposite feelings about it, yet you're like, show it to people first.
Yeah.
Essentially, you're saying you want to, which makes sense, you want to kind of use yourself as the example. Like,
yeah.
This burned me, but I look at me now. Like, yeah. I've grown to enjoy this series.
That's right.
So yeah,
and I'm not saying it belongs to the novice. I'm saying it belongs to everyone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, we agree to disagree. The verdict is in. And that's that. You can find us on Instagram at a good squeeze. Only Instagram, though, because I'm tired all the time. I want to give a shout out to some of our followers for commenting and, you know, giving us some good notes here and there. We have, I believe, a French speaker out there. So, merci beaucoup.
Did you hear me speak French?
Say more stuff.
Say more.
How do you say live and let die in French?
Oh, I don't know. Hey, French guy. How do you say it? What's the French title? Because I know sometimes things get a little...
You couldn't think right now how to say live and let die.
I've been speaking English all day. You got to keep that in mind. I don't know. Vie et laisse vivre. Et laisse mourir. Vie, okay. Toi, tu vas vivre et tu laisses mourir. Vie et laisse mourir.
Okay.
Right? I don't know. Sometimes I don't know.
I don't know.
French guy.
Let me see.
Help me out.
Let's see. French translation.
Well, here's the thing. You have to look up the movie title. Because remember, Home Alone is not Home Alone. It's Mom, I Missed the Plane. So
that wasn't my question.
Yeah, vie et laisse mourir. Vivre et laisser mourir. Okay. Oh, like live and let die. Like you're not telling someone to live and to let die. It's just the verb. Vivre et laisser mourir. Okay, we did it. Find us on Instagram. DM us. Comment this and that. You know, just let us know your feelings about this stuff. I want to know who's listening. We love to... get to know people in this whole realm, because, you know, that's the reason we started this podcast. So hit us up, let us know, and yeah, on that note, August.
Yeah, you know, you're listening to us where you're listening to us, but you can find us on Audioboom, that's our main hub, and everywhere else. Anywhere you can find your podcasts, we're there. Spotify, Apple Play, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts, Google Play.
Pandora? No, I'm checking to look for us on Pandora.
But yes, indeed.
All right.
Keep tuning in to A Good Squeeze.
All right, I'm Margo.
And I'm August.
And this has been
what I just said.
One more time.
A good squeeze.